The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Mumbai Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have
a Swangles.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Rumble, Band.video, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a million. We appreciate the support. We can't do it without our sponsors. They keep the show going. Preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the place to go for My Patriot Supply. They've created a landing page for us. You can get storable food. Hopefully you don't need it, but I'll tell you what, it's better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. It'll last you for 25 years. It'll come in a couple buckets. You can put it down in your basement and forget about it. If you are interested in taking care of that in like 10 minutes, you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com. You can buy food for your family members if they live out of state, if you're nice. Hey, guess who's getting storable food for Christmas this year? Your family. They're going to hate you, but maybe they'll love you when things go bad. But if you are in the market and you are interested, preparewithmacroaggressions.com is the place to go for that. Also, thanks to the folks over at Chemical Free Body. I've been on Green 85 for almost 3.5 years now. I just got a box about 30 minutes ago delivered from Chemical Free Body with my detox bundle. I've done this before. It's a 90-day program. After 90 days, I got on a scale. I don't have weight to lose, but I was joking around and got on a scale, and I kind of scared myself with how much weight I had actually lost. I almost lost 10% of my body weight with it, and I'm not kidding. I had to buy new shorts. I'm not saying you're going to have those same results. I'm just saying that if I had those results and I didn't have a whole lot of weight to lose, you might want to consider detoxifying your body. And if you are interested, you can go to chemicalfreebody.com. You can find the detox bundle. That's what I did. I buy it just like you do. I use the promo code MACRO. Nobody's giving me free stuff. I believe in this. I know it works. I've done it before. I got 3 months till in Acapulco, and I'm going to be feeling good by then. So if you are in the market, chemicalfreebody.com, promo code MACRO is the place to do that. Also, since I mentioned in Acapulco, Acapulco itself got hit by a Category 5 hurricane a couple of weeks ago. It's very suspicious. We're going to leave that off the table for now and just say that these people need your help. And Jeff Berwick and the Acapulco crew that are there in Acapulco have been spearheading this. They've raised a little under $500,000 in just a couple of weeks, and they've been distributing food, water, clothing, generators, chainsaws, whatever they can get their hands on. They've been going on a 10-hour loop with their Sprinter vans out into neighboring cities, buying everything that they can, cleaning out Costco, and coming back and dropping it off and delivering it to these people, and then going back again and doing it. They have been doing this nonstop since it happened. If you are in the market for helping out human beings that you don't know, HurricaneOtisRecovery.com is the place to do that. You can donate money, you can donate fiat, they'll take crypto. A lot of people from a lot of people in the Monero community. Monero's leading the charge, by the way. They have been the most generous in their donations so far. There's a little counter right there. You can see how much money has been raised. It's not going to the Clinton Foundation. It's not going to wind up in some Cayman Islands bank account, I assure you. They're filming everything and showing you what they're buying. So HurricaneOtisRecovery.com is the place to go for that. And hopefully I'll see everybody at Anarchapulco this year, if you're interested. Well, I'll tell you, I'm excited to have Matt Arrett back on this show because he gave me a little taste, like any good drug dealer, right? The first taste is free. And then he got me hooked. And on this 8-part series that he's put together, The Hidden Hand Behind UFOs, I've watched episode 1. It is out of this world, maybe literally out of this world. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Arrett. Hey, Matt, good to see you again. How are you?
Hey. Charlie, yeah, very, very good. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
You've outdone yourself on this one. It is visually amazing. And I'm one episode in, right? That's all we got right now. You're going to drop these out over the course of this next year. I've never seen anything quite like this. I love this stuff anyway, right? So I'll watch it, even if it's some guy who's like done a rough cut on, you know, in his basement somewhere, has put together a pretty cool UFO documentary, I'll probably watch it. I was not expecting this level of quality, though. I should have, but I saw it and I went, not that Netflix is any barometer of anything necessarily, but like, if you saw this on Netflix, you would be like, yeah, of course it's on. I mean, it's every bit movie theater quality. What inspired you to start down this path? Because this seems like kind of a departure from some of your work. But I guess now, if I'm being honest and look into it, maybe this is just the precursor to your work, right?
Yeah, it's more the precursor to my work. And this, what you saw and what other people can see by going to my website, watching episode 1, is really the product of three brains, three minds that dance together really well. And that's my wife, our filmmaker, Jason Dahl, who's really an artist. And I tried to help out wherever I could. And I'll say a bit more about some of the details of what went into that first episode's production, what we're hoping to continue throughout the remaining 7 episodes before this whole journey is finished. And who knows, maybe there's going to be more, because there's always more that you dig up everywhere you scratch. There's new dimensions to things you've been taking for granted about what John F. Kennedy was about. What was he fighting? Way before I went into geopolitics and history, I was absolutely, like many people, early on, a devout believer in the government is covering up UFOs. You know, I read the books, I watched the videos. This is like a heart skip and a jump after discovering that 9/11, like most people listening to this podcast are probably aware, they've made their discoveries. This was an inside job. There's something inside my government that wants to kill me. Okay, what is it? So it doesn't take long before all of a sudden you stumble on UFO conspiracies as well. So I went down that journey for a while, and I mean, this went to ancient alien stuff. I ate it all in. Everybody does. It's natural. But there was always a few anomalies that bothered me that I chose to look away from, but they bothered me, like splinters in the brain that I was like, why would Lawrence Rockefeller found the Disclosure Project, this multi-billionaire heir to the most evil, you know, American-based empire in the world that transformed the U.S. into this basket case imperial beast overseeing the murder of so many great leaders. Why would this Lawrence Rockefeller all of a sudden sponsor Stephen Greer, create the Disclosure Project, bring in Podesta, bring in Hillary Clinton to his ranch and introduce alien disclosure under a new umbrella in the 90s and 92, as soon as the Soviet Union is disintegrating? Also another project funded by Lawrence Rockefeller, who is funding the Esalen Institute's, you know, Soviet American partnership, which Yeltsin and Gorbachev are all participating with high level mystics being brought into Big Sur, California at Esalen, which is funded by Lawrence Rockefeller. And they're then coming out of this process of this, these drug, you know, drug mystical experiences, parapsychology, seances, things like that in Esalen. They're coming out of these things, going back into Russia, and then advancing what became essentially perestroika, the dissolution of the Soviet Union, the privatization of everything, the CIA Soros takeover of the whole Russian world, the military, everything is now run by Western banking cartels. And Lawrence Rockefeller, the second he gets that done, now he creates the Disclosure Project. So things like that bothered me, but I still looked away from it. And then after doing more of my research later on in years, yeah, I got to revisit some of these splinters. And with my new discoveries over the growth of this deep state operation in America, you know, that is a fifth column in America going back to 1776, I had a better appreciation to reevaluate what is behind the FBI's creation. What was the Southern Right exactly? How were these things tied to the efforts to splinter the USA back in the 19th century by British intelligence? What is Rosicrucianism, Kabbalism? Because these Freemasonic cults are always behind the growth and behavior of these intelligence organizations that induce their targets to destroy themselves through superstition and other things. And why do so many of these things, again, overlap with agencies that are cultivating a UFO mythos going back to really even before World War II, before people were really seeing these high density sightings of devices, of drones, saucers being, you know, that people are seeing visually or in the sky after World War II.
Right.
Is this really intergalactic alien beings or from, you know, that people are seeing, right? Or is there a more rational explanation that doesn't require me to necessarily leap into the supernatural? Or right. So that was it.
Yeah, it's a reasonable step-by-step process too. I mean, I had the same questions about Lawrence Rockefeller. Like, he's like, Stephen Greer's like, I've been at Lawrence Rockefeller. I mean, anytime you hear Rockefeller, alarm bell should be going off. And then you go, wait, he's the disclosure guy? And I was thinking, is he the like black sheep of the Rockefeller family? Is he the guy that doesn't subscribe to their ideologies? And it's like, no, he does. He's fully on board with all that. He's just super into UFOs. And you go, boy, I don't know about that. Like, I'm a purist when it comes to disclosure, Matt. I don't want it coming from CNN. I don't want it coming from the CIA. And I don't want it coming from anybody with the last name Rockefeller. I just don't. And so if I'm going to get my information, you know, about this really important event, the situation that we've got things that are from another planet that are coming here and they're trying to interfere with us. If this is in fact what is really going on, I'm just going to need it. I'm not saying I don't believe that this is possible. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I don't believe the people that have had these encounters. I know somebody that's had a very strange encounter. I'm not saying any of that. I'm just saying that I'm going to need it delivered by people that aren't pathological liars with a long history of manipulating people, you know, because if it comes from these people, it's three card Monty. As far as I'm concerned, I just don't understand how the game is played necessarily, but I know that I'm not going to win. Like, I know that this is a con game. I just haven't figured out exactly how it all works. And so when you see Rockefeller in this and you go, okay, all right, there's only so long I can pretend like I don't see this name, and now I got to deal with it. And what did you find? Because he brought in Hillary Clinton early on, and I remember Hillary sitting on, I don't know if it was Jimmy Kimmel's stage or maybe it was Jay Leno or maybe both, and they're talking about UFOs, and she says, oh no, let me correct you, they're now UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomena. She's like, there's a new term. And yeah. And it was like cackle, everybody's laughing, ha ha ha, will you show me the files, President Obama, you know, I could show you, but then I'd have to kill you, you know, like, hey Bill Clinton, will you show me the alien files? I'd love to, but they won't show them to me. And, you know, and you just you hear all this stuff, and they're on these comedy shows talking about it, and I go, all right, this whole thing feels like a setup, an act. Like, what did you, what do you make of this overlap of the, some, you know, the Rockefellers and the Clintons and Stephen Greer, who I don't trust, but, you know, I mean, he's good at doing presentations. He's good at putting films together, I guess. I watched the Sirius documentary with a little Atacama alien guy, and it was interesting, but like, it's again, I would appreciate that film a lot better if I knew that Stephen Greer wasn't hanging out with the Rockefellers. You know what I mean? So
yeah, I know.
How do you feel about all this?
Me too. No, I think you're holding on to all the right paradoxes. That also bothered me as well. And that I think was one of the things, and there's so many ways to address what you've just said, to tie it to, but we'll tie it all together. Number one is, it's not just Hillary and you know, Obama coming out saying this, but you also have Podesta, who came out early back in 2001, making disclosure a big priority. Now he's a high-level person who people know from Pizzagate. The WikiLeaks drops help people understand some of, or at least get their mind around some of the sordid spirit cooking activities that these creeps are affiliated with behind the scenes. He's in charge of the entire green transition for Biden. He's also working as an advisor for the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences of Tom DeLonge's operation. Tom DeLonge is just a useful idiot, clearly. Like, you just listen to this guy speak, and his ego is the size of like the moon. It's wild to listen to this guy's lack of self-awareness, because he read a lot of books about UFOs that fascinated him in magazines throughout the 80s and 90s. And while he was on tour with Blink 182, he was really into it. And he really does feel in his interviews that's why he discovered something that no other human mind ever discovered on their own. And that's why they tapped him. And he describes how high level former deputy directors of the CIA, Office of Intelligence for the White House, people who you and I recognize as being swamp creatures, all tapped him. And he's like, they recognized that I knew what should not have been known. And they wanted me to be part of their team. And we created To the Stars Academy. So you have To the Stars Academy promoting to help the mind of the zeitgeist of the people be prepared through both funding of scientific literature, but also film, documentaries, comic books, graphic novels, you name it, music. They would just pour a lot of money into various cultural influential influencers in order to bridge the gap, as they always say, between reality and fantasy. How do we help people understand what the governments will have to release to the public, which they're not ready for yet? Now, Podesta is advising him. One of the co-founders, who I think is the primary handler of this, when you would go to their old website, was Harold Puthoff, who's a very high-level character who I think gets us a little bit closer to
SRI, right?
Yep. Yeah, the Stanford Research Institute's remote viewing program. He was a CIA. I mean, the guy is a seventh OT operating Thetan Scientologist. He is high level CIA. He's the guy who got the security clearance for Jacques Vallée to be part of the SRI what's called the Stargate program for remote viewing, which does seem to be an outgrowth of MKUltra. MKUltra didn't really disappear with the, you know, we're told, the CIA did human guinea pig testing experiments all over North America and the world, mostly, you know, on, you know, young people, people in hospitals, whatever. But they stopped doing that when it all became revealed with the Church Committee hearings funded by the by Nelson Rockefeller, who oversaw the Church Committee hearings, right? Ooh. Who released this. And now they cleaned up their act. Now that it was all revealed, we know about Project Mockingbird that was revealed, and MKUltra was revealed, and COINTELPRO was revealed. So now they cleaned up their act, and they're the good guys now.
Right.
No, they just really moved a lot of those things that they honed and crafted since 1950, when this thing was put into motion in a serious way. Funding, I mean, people want to know where DMT comes from, the psilocybin mushrooms, the LSD, all of the psychedelics that are marketed, ironically, both in the health community today. You know, you've got everyone's microaggressed, and you need micro dosing to deal with your microaggressions so that you can be an adaptive, satisfied, you know, being within the New World Order, but it's being marketed on Joe Rogan and all the stuff. But people don't ask, well, where does this come from? And it came from high level psychiatrists working with sociopathic imperialists in Tavistock, the CIA MKUltra program, to carry out experiments to figure out how do you depattern the mind of humans, to reconstruct the minds of humans in some way that social engineers would be happy with. And a lot of this was funded by, again, the Rockefeller Foundation, things like that. So Lawrence Rockefeller's funding the human potential movement out of Esalen. You've got the remote viewing thing with Harold Puthoff, Scientologist, which, by the way, there's a lot of Scientologists in this story. Jacques Vallée, who's close friends with high-level Satanists like Anton LaVey, Kenneth Anger, the disciple of Crowley, who basically created the whole horror movie genre. These are people who are working with Vallée. Michael Aquino, the founder of the Temple of Set, also very closely enmeshed in this whole parapsychology bureau. And that, you know, Alan Hynek also is the primary mentor of Jacques Vallée. Alan Hynek is somebody who is a devout follower of theosophy, going back to his days even before he went into full blown science under the Manhattan Project, which is what gave him his start. Because he worked through the Manhattan Project. And that's going to be a big part of episode two, actually, in the UFO series that we're making right now. But Hynek came out of that. He was assigned to oversee Project Sign, Project Grudge, and then Project Blue Book. And then he was one of these guys who, you know, made this miraculous conversion from being this really lame skeptic. Like, he was obviously a fake skeptic, because if you look at like the way he would try to refute in the 1940s and 50s, people who believed in UFOs, and they would see things, they were coming out talking about it. His way of being the skeptic was saying, no, what you're seeing is refraction of light from Jupiter. What you're seeing is swamp gas. It's obviously, so he's such
a fake. The swamp gas guy.
He's the swamp gas guy. That's him. He made it up because he knew. It's like having Tony Blair defend Christianity at representing, you know, the Christian world in a debate with an atheist, which is what he did a couple of years ago. And of course he failed. Of course, everybody watching that wants to go with Richard Dawkins and the atheist, because he sucks at it. He doesn't believe in Christianity. So That's what Hynek. And then Hynek goes through a big about face, now becoming like who will talk about UFOs to anybody with an ear to listen. And so he then sponsors Jacques Vallée. They're all working with the military industrial complex. They're all working with cyberneticists. Jacques Vallée is a cybernetics junkie who co-founds ARPANET. The precursor for the
ARPA
internet. Yeah, so he's working directly in that team as the computational scientist that co-creates the internet as we know it. They're working again on remote viewing, and part of this whole thing that Harold Puthoff, Vallée, Colonel John Alexander comes into play on this thing, who's also very tight with Michael Aquino. This is part of these guys are bringing in a scientific veneer to ghosts, seances, parapsychology, things that were more relegated to the dark domains in the 19th century. They want to now use certain innovations of acausal quantum mechanics that, again, was being funded by the Rockefeller machinery from the 1930s and 40s as the new science, right? Because the new science was based on the idea that, no, mathematical probability theory is all we're allowed to use if we want to do science. So the people who were making scientific discoveries, like Max Planck and Einstein and Madame Curie and Mendeleev and all of those, the old scientific guard who believe in truth and believe in causality, they're the old wisdom. They don't know the new game in town. Niels Bohr, Heisenberg, Wolfgang Pauli, Oppenheimer, these are the new guard. They know that reality is based on the rejection of any ontological truth. And so they built up, and the Rockefeller Foundation money went behind pouring tons of cash into a new generation of scientists who never made discoveries. They made models that were all grounded in the science of maybe. We can know probable 97% chance that the electron will be here and not there. You know, because there's a certain breaking of the classical physics when you get into the atomic domain, right? But how do you deal with that fact? They would say all that's needed is just probability theory, and that became the enforcers who came to prominence under the Manhattan Project, and then who created a linguistic framework in science for things like the Stanford Research Institute's Parapsychology Bureau and Remote Viewing and Stargate projects, to then say, okay, maybe we can, through transcendental meditation, like what Stephen Greer went through on Rockefeller's dime, and through, you know, tapping into new dimensions of the brain using psychedelics, Maybe we can run through walls. Maybe we can create, as they called it, the Jedi warrior program for Fort Bragg. And all of this became thousands of high-level military officers were processed through Esalen, just like we saw with the KGB mystics and Yeltsin being brought in to be processed and then sent back to carry out certain Madeline Ferguson called the open conspiracy, right, in 1979. So they're now going to advance policies that will bring about this new age of Aquarius back in their home, their whatever part of the world that they're in. These soldiers literally operated and were processed under Colonel Shannon. That there's a movie called The Men Who Stare at Goats, you know?
Yeah.
That became the basis of the PSYOP groups that were then working with Mind Wars architect Michael Aquino, the founder of the Temple of Set, to make goats' hearts explode just by the power of your intention, bend spoons, other things. And these were the new sort of Mithraic cult, as far as I could see it. It really is. They've always wanted to create sustainable Mithraic cults, which is sort of the cult system of the old Roman legions and Praetorian Guard. They were all part of the cult of Mithra. That's what they found, the Templars. There's like hundreds of Mithraic temples underground around the world, especially in the Holy Land, but also in England and Europe. Basically, I'm now persuaded that the Templars, when they were created as a secret society of pseudo-Christian satanic mercenaries to advance the Crusades, were Mithraic. It's a rebranded Mithraic cult system, which continued even after the Templars the leaders were nominally burned. They kept it going. And, you know, in the current Stanford Research Institute, that was part of the core focus, is to create a new elite guard of Jedis, part of the whole Jedi language. And don't get me wrong, George Lucas,
yes,
also a part of this thing. Yeah. And yeah, that went into overseeing things like Desert Storm, 9/11, because you're wondering, like, why would the U.S. act like such an advanced basket case of evil, overseeing so much destruction, not just to others, but to ourselves too, killing American people? How could something happen like that? And it could not have happened were it not for this, these guard of self-professed wannabe elitist Nietzschean Jedis cultivated to think of themselves as sort of a new grail. They're like people who believe that there are these high level secret knights with a secret divine mission that are then they're deconstructed already mentally. They've been reconstructed to have a more useful worldview that's devoid of conscience or morality. And they go in like under General Stubblebean, who's also overseeing the remote viewing project. He's now one of the highest level, generals overseeing the Pacific Fleet, who's bringing a lot of these groups into overseeing Desert Storm. A lot of them are playing a key role in 9/11. And they're also preparing the groundwork for the great unveil with Lawrence Rockefeller, Stephen Greer, and others who are now working to say, okay, well, we need a new set of belief structures that'll be more in harmony with the type of technocratic controls of this age of Aquarius, where people will have the appearance of freedom and democracy, but none of the reality of it. But that means we need to reset a lot of the sacred myths and sacred stories, like Christianity, things like that, that are no longer applicable to that new type of system of controls, right, that we need to bring online. And that's where I think a lot of this has been. This is sort of, I think, the biggest thing for the oligarchy. It's more important to the oligarchy is this creation of new sacred stories that will happen through trauma. That's part of the MKUltra and the Stanford Research Institute's changing images of man thing as well, with people like Joseph Campbell, who played a role in this. He's a teacher of George Lucas, or the mentor of George Lucas. The changing images of man idea and the MKUltra idea of changing human beings into something new, their view of it was you must have the destruction of the old. You have to break the will and mind of the guinea pig in order to then have the ability to create a new, more malleable, adaptive persona that you then create, which is sick and scary and disgusting, because there's another way of transforming somebody from a bad pattern of thinking to a better pattern, which is through discoveries, you know, teaching, role modeling, morality. You could do it in a very healthy way, but the oligarchy, they're sort of the opposite of what I'm of this.
That's no fun. That's no fun. When we can break their brains and then keep them on this slave plantation, that works better for them. I'm not surprised to hear George Lucas's involvement in this. I remember I went through the 4-day transcendental meditation course myself years ago, many years ago, I think 2009. And we were talking, I was talking about that with my instructor. And about this, he was describing something in a way. I said, well, that sounds like the Force. You know what I mean? Like, you know, that sounds like the way you're describing that is it sounds like the Force. He goes, well, would it surprise you to know that George Lucas is into TM? I said, no, I guess no. No, now that you mention it, it probably wouldn't surprise me. So I wonder about this whole, you mentioned Scientology. They're definitely an interesting side to this. I mean, they're as litigious as they get, which is weird because it seems like if you've got this upstanding sort of operation that you're running, you should invite everybody in instead of trying to sue anybody that leaves or talks. I mean, it's a talk about an unhealthy relationship with your people, man. That seems to me I'll just say it seems like a cult. And I wonder, we go back in time a little bit to the forming of Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and we got a lot of the same guys around that same thing. We've got Jack Parsons, and we've got Aleister Crowley, and we've got L. Ron Hubbard, and we've got the Suicide Squad, right? We've got these guys that feel like they're very much one deviation away from being up at Stanford Research. You know, instead of being down in Pasadena, they could be up north and in Palo Alto talking to those guys. Is there overlap between what was going on with JPL and what was going on at SRI?
Oh yeah. 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 No, I mean, it's, well, that's a big part. I'm going to have a whole episode. Cynthia and I are going to have a whole episode on this. The Scientology angle is more important than I realized. I never quite, yeah, it was only when I started picking up this project that it meant as much, and I started picking up as many lines and pulling on them that revealed what Scientology is. And I mean, just to be clear, L. Ron Hubbard didn't leave the occult after Aleister Crowley died. You know, people probably are aware, as you just pointed out, you had Parsons and Hubbard living together in a manor in a manoir in California. They were doing ritual sex magic, Babylon working, things like that to try to produce the Antichrist. You know, whoever could like give birth to the Antichrist is going to be like, you know,
is that the place Jared cool. Leto bought?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I think so. Yeah. I heard something similar too. And you know, the story is, you know, after Crowley died, the Grand Master died, the thing kind of dissolved, Hubbard blew himself up. Parsons blew himself up. Hubbard went on, made his own new religion in 1951. Hubbard's son, also named L. Ron Hubbard, or Ron Hubbard or something, changed his name though for obvious reasons. He left the group in 59, defected, and gave an interview that I'm going to cite from. And in it was the Penthouse, actually, in 1983. And he's asked, like, what was the religion practiced in the household growing up? And he said, Satanism, just straight Satanism, black magic. That's all I knew. And he goes at length describing the type of satanic rituals in the household and how Scientology is crafted to make it harder to see, because you're stretching a ritual that would typically take maybe days or weeks in a satanic environment of the, let's say, by the OTO, under an OTO operating system, weeks max. And he says, no, but it's stretched out over a lifetime. And part of that is the infusion of certain practices as well that involve the Eleusinian mysteries, the rites of Eleusis that Aleister Crowley had pioneered back in 1910, utilizing his work on mescaline that was later adopted by MKUltra and Tavistock, you know, and decades and decades later as part of the MKUltra program. But the use of mescal was a big part of the Crowley innovation of the rites of Eleusis to basically give people it's the creation of near-death experiences under a ritualistic veneer, helped out with some psychedelic drugs that were also available in ancient times, by the way.
Right.
Thousands of people were processed through the Eleusinian mysteries before Christianity and during.
Oh, wow.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was a big deal, and they were using basically like I think Albert Hoffman made a good case. The guy who pioneered LSD-25, lysergic acid. Mm-hmm. He became a world's leading expert on the Eleusinian mysteries. And he made a very good case that this was, you know, wheat blight fungus that does have a hallucinogenic effect that would have been used with other hallucinogens.
Yeah.
To facilitate that process. Now, part of the life-death experience, if you look at the amount of, there's a lot of Scientology defectors who have made a point that by the time you get to the higher OT rites, because I think there's officially 8 or 9 rites, but there's, seems like there's probably more on top of that, as there often are with these things. A lot of people die. A lot of young people die. There's definitely certain situations created to give people that near-death experience where when you come out of that sort of process, it's as good as gold for creating like a new type of persona, a new type of identity that gives you greater access to your creative spectrum, more abandonment of your ego. Like mm-hmm. with, you know, when yeah. we take things for granted, our ego plays more of a role than it would if we realize that, no, we're all mortal and we really believe that we're about to die. Now some to create, I think, environments where people believe they're going to die. Sometimes people will die. right. Maybe they jumped off the wrong side of the building. Like I think he had that case, that movie, The Game, you know, with Michael Douglas.
Yeah.
Or they just couldn't get out of the coffin that they found themselves awoken, you know, and then they scratched and they couldn't get out in time. The oxygen ran out. So you get a lot of cases like that. But you can't talk about it. So you got, we have to infer and Hubbard's son was a good inference to get us into an insight into the satanic nature of what his father did, utilizing the cover of a science fiction cult. Also, Hubbard himself, there was a leak of some of his own programs that he wrote with his own hand to the administrators of the Scientology groups in 1980, I think, or 81, where he does describe himself as the Antichrist. You know, he describes...
Oh, okay.
You know, he's like, you know, you could interpret, he's saying you could interpret the end times discussed in the book of Revelation as the coming of the Markabian order, the Markabian Federation that will come. And that's what, and he's saying, he describes how that's what the Bible is saying the second coming of Christ is. It's actually Christ is the evil Markabian order who will come to recapture humankind after we broke free 20,000 years ago. And he's got this very, very elaborate cosmology, right, baked into a system of multi-billionaire galactic federations that became a republic that fell to an empire with dark Sith lords that are behind a lot of the cosmology that involved the setting of the followers of the Sith Lord into volcanoes in the earth that then, you know, became sort of like astral spirit beings at a certain point, possessing our entire body that we have to liberate ourselves from. If we want to be able to astral project and have Jedi powers, we have to be able to go through those OT ceremonies, right, to purge ourselves of these things to become pure, like Hubbard. And Hubbard describes how, well, you know, in that sense, you could describe anybody fighting to stop this evil Markabian Jesus return, the Antichrist. In that sense, yes, I am the Antichrist.
You could very easily be telling everybody to put on purple or put on black Nikes and purple shrouds and wait for the spaceship behind the comet like they did in 97 down in San Diego. I mean, he's one step away from handing out laced Kool-Aid to everybody, right? I mean, he's out of his mind with this stuff. This sounds like a death cult to me.
It's not different enough from that Apple, what was his name? That 1997 cult. The nerds, right? The Bill Gates wannabes.
His name was Doe. I know that leader, his name was Doe, they were getting on the comet, but they're getting on the spaceship, but it was behind the comet, you know, and you can't get to the comet from San Diego unless you're dead. Everybody knows that.
Of course. So
we all got to die. So yeah, but again, it kind of goes to like people watch that in the news and they go, really? Heaven's Gate. Mm-hmm. That was the name of it, by the way.
Oh yeah. I remember that. Right.
You watch that and you go, oh, come on. I remember they put his face on Time Magazine. It was just his face. And it was so funny because I had the Time Magazine and I was doing it to my roommates, you know, I would come in and do it. And it was obviously a joke, but unfortunately, like, I get the feeling that this is, that's just one incarnation of this, or Jim Jones or whatever he was doing. Well, but I feel like there is, this has been going on for thousands and thousands of years. People talking about, like, you know, you get a charismatic leader who gets a bunch of people that are looking for answers, and he says he's got them and you want them. And it requires you to do some things that are a little different because you got to break out of your comfort zone. Next thing you know, you're doing unspeakable things in the name of freeing your soul, right? I mean, this is crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, and all of the cults, it's like there's no case of any particular cult that I could find of the 1960s, 70s, 80s to the present that is not had some direct influence of CIA, MKUltra connections, and occult networks as well, all at the same time. And this, I'm referring to you've already brought up Jim Jones, high level Western intelligence operations involved there. CIA is all over the place. And Charles Manson, the Manson family, again, somebody who had a messiah complex, and was himself trained as a Scientology. He had something like 280 hours of auditing behind him.
Oh, really?
Scientology, I didn't know that. Auditing. Yeah. There's a book called Chaos, the CIA and the Manson Family, that touches on this. But people could just Google this, Charles Manson Scientology. You'll get quite a bit. Surprisingly, there's some good researchers who have pulled a lot of this stuff together. But he was always overseen. He had handlers with American intelligence the entire time, getting him out of jail. Every time he was in jail, getting right out, making sure that his little commune was protected. You know, they were observing them the whole time. They knew exactly that there was going to be this ritual murder of Sharon Tate, the whole thing. And this does bring in, obviously, Roman Polanski as well into a weird, like, what was he actually doing in Hollywood, and with certain stories that involved things that, you know, we saw that Crowley and these Satanists are very fixated with, of producing a baby with Satan. What would a Satan's spawn actually look like?
It looked like Justin Trudeau. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, I guess so. Hey, experiment's done.
Yeah. Yeah. But you mentioned Hollywood though, too, because of this role. I mean, you hear the stories about what goes on in, you know, and I lived in LA for 20 years. I knew a lot of Hollywood people, and I would ask them, you know, tell me your stories. And I knew that I knew that Hollywood was run by scumbags that were trying to bang all the actresses and everything. And I knew that there was also a gay mafia there that was running things, and the same sort of applied. Mm. Where I didn't, while I was there, what I didn't really understand, because I didn't know anyone that was involved in it, I didn't understand the real dark occult component to it. I didn't know about that stuff. It wasn't until years later that I started looking back on it going, you know, I always thought Hollywood was a bad place. Like, you'd have to compromise your values, or, you know, I didn't think of them as actually like selling their soul until much later. Then I realized, oh, well, these people, you know, hear the Jim Todd talk about how they would take the master recordings of the albums that had just been created and put them in this room and have this black magic ritual and infuse the master recordings with all of this energy, and then take that, and then they'd say, all right, now we're going to release the new, I don't know, Led Zeppelin album or whatever it was. And I'd hear that and go, God, I mean, it sounds crazy, but, you know, also possible, right? So is Hollywood run by this sort of hidden hand?
Well, it seems so, yeah. I mean, there does seem to have been a fight in the 1930s, 40s, into the 50s and early 60s, where there were still patriots, good people who were trying to use the medium of cinema within Hollywood because cinema is a very powerful tool for good or for evil, right? Like, you're able to really touch the soul of people, bypassing the sentinels of logic. That's a hugely influential way to like affect the zeitgeist, the soul of the people, or the folk spirit, as the Germans would call it, right? As a whole, I don't believe in like one. I believe we have distinct souls. We're all made in the image of God. I don't believe, but as far as the language I'm using, you could affect the whole zeitgeist. And so you had people like John Frankenheimer. I think he was a very noble filmmaker who was working to educate emotionally, intellectually, and give entertainment too at the same time through a lot of his movies of the early 60s and 50s with Kirk Douglas and Burt Lancaster. They were all part of like this. And they were all patriots. They were all really just good people who hated the fact that the U.S. was sliding into empire. And they were often embedding a lot of moral lessons and political lessons into their stories. And then he had this other thing. And this other thing does seem to be tied to the mafia on the one hand, but the mafia is not a thing unto itself. The mafia has always been, like, if you look at the leading figures within the Bronfman dynasty, they're inducted into the, like, Samuel Bronfman was made a Knight of the Order of Bath, which is a very high level occult Freemasonic agency that's tied to the old hereditary systems of Europe. Mayor Lansky as well. Like they're sort of a necessary creation of organized crime that had Freemasonic high level operations at the top. The P2 Lodge in Italy was a big one that incorporated high level occult networks of the Sicilian and Corsican mafias, also overlapped with the Jewish mafia too. That was always run by the followers of Giuseppe Mazzini, who created the P1 Lodge in the first place, that was behind the things like the First International. The Second International was the P1 Lodge that ran a lot of the proto-Bolshevik, you know, warfare in the 19th century, the Young Europe movement, Young Germans, Young French, you know, Young America movement. That was Albert Pike, actually, who was a leading figure of the Young America movement, Southern branch.
I never thought of the mafia and Freemason component being like a thing. I always thought of it as, I mean, I knew organized crime wasn't detached from intelligence. You know, mm-hmm. I understood that there was a big Venn diagram overlap between them, but I never mm-hmm. really considered organized crime with Freemasonry or anything like that, because I always thought of it as more like, in my mind, it was organized crime. If you were on the Italian slant of it, it was like you were very Catholic, or you know, whatever. Or on the Jewish mafia side, you were very Jewish. But I never really thought of it as even beyond that, which is like, well, there's secret society components to both of them. I understand you have to be kind of secret about things when you're in the mafia, but I thought that was more like what you don't want us all to go to prison. Not like that. This was a spiritual battle that was going on. That escaped me.
Well, a lot of the mafia players are kind of useful idiots, right? Like a lot of them, they're very influenced by a certain romanticism of what they're doing as well. A lot of people in the mafia really enjoy like the Sopranos or the Godfather movies, and you're like they really, really like these are highly influential within the culture of the mafia itself. And you're like, why? When it doesn't make a very romantic existence out of people inside the mafia. You generally, you're going to die a violent death probably. But yet there's something seductive that is very influential on shaping the character of many of the people within the mafia down the chain of command, who have a more romantic view of themselves than they really deserve. And behind a lot of this stuff, there does seem to be, like, you know, overlapping with the occult and the alien thing, you got people like Generoso Pope Jr., who was working with the CIA's directly under Alan Dulles, and Richard Bissell at the CIA's Office for Policy Coordination. He was trained in 1951 for 18 months under Alan Dulles. This is the son, his godfather is Frank Costello, right? Who gave him, by the way, the money to found what he creates right after he gets out of the OPC in 1952, he creates the National Enquirer. And the National Enquirer becomes sort of a way to both create feelers for the UFO community or the people who think outside the box, and also to feed back into and influence that very same community that would start on the fringe and then increasingly be incubated to then become more normatized over time.
Wait, and Frank Costello's son started the National Enquirer?
His godson. Yeah. His godson. Generoso Pope Jr. Yeah.
And Frank Costello is the guy that we see in all the videos that got whacked in front of the steakhouse, right?
I think that's the same guy. Yeah. 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 That's right.
And his caddy.
Yeah.
Holy moly. Well, and funny, like, you, since you mentioned National Enquirer, you know, like, there's that nod to them in the Men in Black movies where it's like, well, we get all our information there. You know, like, yeah, no. You guys think that this is a joke magazine, but in actuality, like, we treat it as reality. That was like a good, you know, good for a laugh, like, yeah. In the movie. But then you start to now from what you've said, oh, baby, that might have been like predictive programming.
Well, that's so good that you just said that, because that's exactly it. We have this like fantasy world and reality. And the idea, as Tom DeLonge was assigned to say publicly, that we want to bridge the gap between that separates reality from fiction. Right. Mm-hmm. What does he mean? Does he mean that reality is stranger than fiction, or that we have to make fiction our reality? Like, what is he talking about? So There's ways of interpreting that. Now, with the National Enquirer thing, and this will get us directly into the Hollywood question. Based on, and you just fast forwarded on that perfectly. That was great. But one of the things that they really started doing, especially in the 70s after Project Blue Book was discontinued in 69, is the National Enquirer starts funding Project, the Blue Ribbon Project, the Blue Ribbon Committee. And the Blue Ribbon Committee starts pouring millions and millions of dollars into everybody anywhere in the world who can come up with experimental data that proves aliens exist and have been interfacing with humans. So they start basically encouraging people to conduct massive fraud. People start all of a sudden discovering that in my backyard, I have this metallic orb that just appeared. And that, you know, and a lot of these things are getting now a lot of media coverage. Mm-hmm. The person who's assigned to oversee the Blue Ribbon Committee is J. Allen Hynek. Once again, right off of his job from Project Blue Book. Now he's doing this. By the way, Project Blue Book was founded by Charles Cabell in 1951. Charles Cabell then became the deputy director of the CIA, who JFK later on fired for what they were doing to, you know, basically run regime change around the world, along with Richard Bissell and Alan Dulles. He fired all three of these guys. All three of these guys are playing a top-down role shaping the UFO mythos. Richard Bissell, by the way, who's overseeing, he's in charge of the Dirty Tricks Department of the CIA that carries out different hits of various international leaders. He's also in charge. He's the founder of Area 51, where they're conducting experimental work on drones and other German engineered aerospace technology that was absorbed by the US military industrial complex after World War II. A lot of this is all sucked in, classified, and the type of flying saucer tech that the Germans and the Italians were innovating just disappeared. We have pictures, some descriptions, but not much. But then people are seeing things starting in 1947, all of a sudden, massive sightings, right? So
are we talking about Der Glocken, the bell?
I don't know about that one. I didn't look at that one specifically.
We've seen pictures of it. Looks like the Liberty Bell with a big swastika on it.
That's probably tied to George Adamski's photography, right? George Adamski, who is creating his own, before Scientology, you had Adamski creating this theosophy, science fiction cult, and was running this telescope at the base of Palomar Observatory, taking official photographs of UFOs in 1950 that became like plastered across all National Enquirer magazines and everything else. And he has a cult that still exists to this day that treats him like he's that he was really this clairvoyant spirit being receiving messages from Venus as well, and the ascended masters who came out of like Atlanta. They work this whole thing into this weird hyperborean occult Aryan mysticism that they just tweaked it a little bit to extend it to the ascended masters are not in Tibet or inside the hollow earth the way the Nazis thought. They're actually on Saturn or something like that, right?
Gotcha.
So they just add, or maybe in another dimension, maybe, right? So all that to say, we'll get back to that. But for the Hollywood thing, so Alan Hynek, after doing this and pouring a lot of money, so much money poured into people who could show photographs and other things, and you know, put a lot of, then he goes on to advise Steven Spielberg, and him and Jacques Vallée, the friend I was thinking of Anton LaVey.
Oh yeah.
They're now on the set working to create the first really big propaganda film of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, and the Close Encounters sort of taxidermy system, the different types of encounters was scientifically created by Hynek. Spielberg and Lucas is also, like I said, he becomes a disciple during this time of Joseph Campbell, the guy whose whole career is funded by Lawrence Rockefeller. And Campbell is a part of the Changing Images of Man working group out of the Stanford Research Institute. He co-writes this on basically how do you create new myths, new sacred stories for humanity. And one of the problems that George Lucas describes after going through his seminars and reading Campbell's works is that America doesn't have enough folklore, those sorts of stories that shape the character. They're more than entertainment. He's like, the closest thing we had was the cowboy Indian stories. And he's like, we needed something new. So they took the template of the Grail myths, the romantic Grail myths that were also promoted back during the time of the Crusades. And they retooled some of that. And you know, again, you have Spielberg. Alan Hynek plays a role actually in Close Encounters as well. He goes on to create E.T. and the Indiana Jones movies as well that Lucas and Spielberg team up for. A lot of what they're doing is, again, blurring reality and fiction, because the oligarchy has their own belief. The higher level oligarchs that have been managing the shit show for a long time, they have their own crazy ass beliefs and cosmology and belief structure that involves Solomon's Temple. They believe, like, the royal family of Britain really does believe that they are the heirs of the bloodline of Jesus, who, like, they believe in the Gnostic Bible, the Gnostic Gospels, that Jesus, you know, procreated with Mary Magdalene, had a bloodline that's been protected, and that gave rise to the Merovingian dynasty, that gave rise to all of the family, the old families. They're all part of the Jesus bloodline. They believe in this sacred story of rebuilding Solomon's Temple, of recapturing the Holy Land, creating the new Crusader Holy Land, as the Crusaders had that kingdom of heaven, so-called, you know, for 200 years during the 12th and 13th centuries. They believe in this shit. They believe in the Ark. The there's a whole mythos that's embedded within the Freemasonic rites of initiation around Ark language. It's tied to Kabbalah. They believe in this stuff. And if you look at what they've been doing, Kali, the cult of Kali, it's part of also the Indian sort of assassin's cult of death that involved sacrificing children, which is what the Kali cult had been doing for thousands of years. It's a real thing in India that interfaces with the different, you know, imperial theosophists who took different aspects for their own variation of what Indian religion was going to be in the eyes of Western stupid people. And so the Kali cult practices, that's part of the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, right? Kali Ma, as he takes
right? He pulls the heart out and shows it to
and you have all these kids who are, like, you know, doing, like, forced labor in mining and stuff. Yep. That's actual stuff. So they're creating a situation where, and the mind of the audience is no longer able to differentiate. They treat things that they would otherwise be able to discover is part of the oligarchical identity shaping our world and our history. And it relegates it all to, oh, that's just fantasy. That's just for entertainment. That's not real.
Yeah.
Or the last one I'll just say is the Hollywood, the Indiana Jones Part 4, which is pretty much exactly the storyline that was packaged and brought to the world earlier this year with the mummified ET alien that they found in these Peruvian, you know, mines. And it was brought to the Mexican Congress. It's that is directly taken out of the Peruvian mummified aliens that were part of the Indiana Jones Part 4 script, overseen by Lucas and Spielberg as well. It's part of, so it has multiple purposes, right? As far as guiding their own strategy for the next phase of practice for the mass brainwashing, but also to directly blur reality and fiction. And I didn't even talk about the occult stuff, but that's there obviously too. Yeah.
Yeah. This, I'll tell you, it goes so much deeper than you think. UFOs, the UFO story to me, it kind of hits every level, right? If you're just a kid, you can watch it and be fascinated by it. You can watch Star Wars. You can think about how this, you can think about, other planets but really when you dig into it, it's the hero's journey, right? I mean, Lucas wrote this and it's like, this is not a new concept. This is in mythology from, you have, like, you go home, there's nothing left for you at home. You decide, I got to go. And you find the mentor that shapes you and does all this stuff. So, you know, I think there's some interesting, I think if you watch Star Wars as a, as a kid, like I did, I remember seeing it in the theater. I'm so old that I remember seeing it in the theater when I was 5 years old, and it blew my mind. Right. And so as a kid, you get that version of it. As you get a little bit older, you start to, you know, like a good Hollywood kids movie does, if it's like a Pixar movie or something like that, there's a layer for the kids. And then there's jokes that are a little bit above it that the adults are laughing at too. And so it's like two movies in one. And I noticed that a lot with the Star Wars movies where, you know, there's the I'm at a movie and I'm watching amazing things and this is fascinating, but then there's that deeper layer. There's that theme of good and evil that runs through it. There's this idea that there's the empire, they're going to, you know, they're coming to get you, but we've got to rescue ourselves. And it the whole thing doesn't seem accidental to me. I say this as I've spent my freshman year sitting in my Cinema 190 class at USC in the George Lucas Theater. Okay. Ooh. So, you know, sitting there in the place that he donated a bunch of money to teach kids in college as freshmen about what it is to make amazing movies. And I'd always thought it was like, learn how to shoot it, get a good script. And what I didn't understand was that there's this whole sublayer behind it, which is like, there's an agenda at play. There's things that they want the audience to believe in. There's ways that you can tell it. These directors aren't accidentally like coming out of nowhere. They're showing their allegiance to this cult or whatever it is, and they're believers in it. And I just wonder about this, man. I wonder like what the end goal is, you know, for all of this. Is it like a multi-layered approach to control our minds by limiting us or getting us to only think that there's certain things out there, control, obviously physical control. We know about 15-minute cities and things like that. We know that goal that they want to control. But if you just control us physically, that's not enough, right? You got to control us on a couple different planes of existence.
Yeah, that's right. No, and I'm glad that you pointed that out, because the human component has not one, but three primary aspects. Right. We've got our physical aspect. We got the mind, body, soul. Right. That's the And so from the standpoint of institutions, society as a whole can be sort of seen as an expression of the need to satisfy those three aspects of our lives. You've got obviously the point of schools, you know, in the world is to satisfy the cultivation of the mind, of logic, the reasoning skills. Then you have healthcare, health systems, hospitals, food production, water infrastructure, things like that to satisfy the body. That's part of the physical economy. And then there's the other part, the spirit, that's not so mappable as the other two are. The other two are sort of expressible in a way that is susceptible to pure logic, in a sense. I could logically think about the amount of space we have in the world, the amount of people there are, the amount of life expectancy they should have to live a dignified life. What does that mean in terms of the productive systems? What type of energy should be available for them to satisfy their physical needs? The supply chain system, right, that has to exist, be maintained and improved upon for that growing rate of people to be able to live a dignified life. So these are things I can wrap my mind around relatively easily. I could think about the boundary conditions of what's limiting it, what type of new discoveries should be encouraged to overcome those limits to growth. These are the sorts of things that oligarchs think about. Of course, they don't want the victims to think about solutions to those things. They want us to think about, how do I adapt my limits, as if the limits were absolute law, because, you know, what we know now is all we could possibly ever know. So we should get used to, like, you know, living with less and thinking small, eating bugs, blah, blah, blah. Now, but all that to say, then you have that domain, that fight to keep people in the physical box, bodily wise, requires that their intellects be kept in intellectual boxes. So the type of reforms that the Rockefeller Foundation would want in the education of science, of the humanities, of science, you know, anything in the school system would be conducive to creating certain axioms, right, that would be the foundation of models that would explain whatever biology, cell biology, cosmology, anthropology. There's certain models that we must adapt to if we want to be peer reviewed, if we want to become a teacher, if we want to have a career and be respected in whatever field. We have to abide by those things.
Medical industry, so, of course, the medical schools that they dominated and created and said, this is all that other stuff is hocus pocus. This is the way we teach it now. Petroleum based chemicals that form these pharmaceutical drugs. And if you agree with this, then we'll give you your credentials. We'll be in charge of the medical schools and whatnot. That's a real limiting belief system that keeps doctors to this day. You got to be smart, right? I mean, theoretically, you got to be smart to be a doctor. And yet, they're so in a box that the minute you say, well, you know, look, this ivermectin, they go, nope. And you go, boy, it's a testament to the reflexive conditioning of these. Whether it's just elementary school, a government school that you go to, or if you evolve and get to a point where you're in medical school, those medical schools were put together by the Rockefellers, right? So even our idea of medicine and health is inside some sort of box that they've created.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Or the idea of fossil fuels, right? Like the idea that this stuff even is this limited resource that only exists in under the ground because of millions of years of plants and dinosaurs becoming oil. Right. Evidence has shown us clearly that oil wells that we thought had been tapped in the 70s are like replenishing really fast. There's things that we just don't know. We've only scratched like maybe 16 kilometers into the crust of the earth. The crust is 60 kilometers. We're shown all of these images of what's inside of the earth exactly. And there's 22,000 kilometers of mantle and then 2,000 a core of lava that has, we're told like iron that goes above and below and thermal convection causing the magnetic field to flip. And like, these are, you're making shit up. Like humility, people, like just humility. Let's just admit what we don't know. And again, the Rockefeller machinery, there's not one part of our academic experience that hasn't been negatively affected by false axioms that have created intellectual blinders on people so that they don't know how to make discoveries. They don't know what discoveries should be made or are possible. Even fusion technology is always 30 years away. It'll never happen. It's like, well, maybe it's because you're thinking about it stupidly by like thinking you have to like kinetically hit atoms together maybe there's another way of thinking about what's going on that will involve possibly cold fusion or utilizing least action pathways of the orbits of these various atoms that you're playing with that will allow them to get that effect that you are, that muscle force alone is not getting you. You're getting negative results. So all that to say, there's this like this destruction of our creative reason. So there's that aspect that then feeds into maintaining the justification that there's a limit. There's limits in the physical world that we have to live by and adapt to like animals. And maybe the computer models that these cyberneticists say must govern our entire reality that came out of the Manhattan Project. All of the cybernetics cult was all created by British intelligence, by the way, that created the Manhattan Project, that then amplified this to create a science of controls in the Soviet system over JFK's dead body through RAND, everything that planned out our military systems. It's cybernetics. It's a cybernetics cult international. That's what this thing is. So all that to say, the mind and body are not sufficient because you'll still get people who have a heart, who have a spirit. They have a love of justice, a love of freedom. Mm-hmm. They will feel constrained by the intellectual limitations of what they're being told they have to abide by to be published. They won't be satisfied being told they have to eat bugs. They will tend to have a conscience that will animate their behavior in a way that makes them non-predictable. Because the oligarchy, all they really want is a system of predictability and control on every level, mind, body, soul. So to reduce the chances of that, well, this is where the sacred stories come into play. And I think this is the most important of all of the three domains and the one that people probably entertain the least because it also can be a bit crazy. Now you have to get into, and also it's the most subjective. It's the most subjective because all have our hearts shaped by the things we love. Our movies, our video games, our a lot of our music, and we all love Star Wars. Our drugs, all of the stuff. It's like it's a deep part of what shaped our identities, And it's hard to be critical about those things. Yeah. But that's the most important one, the most important ones to be critical of. And so in that sense, if you look at what grew out of MKUltra, it wasn't just doing electroshock therapy and drugs to depattern people in the Allen Memorial Institute of Montreal and stuff. It was also the Grateful Dead. I mean, the founders of the Grateful Dead, who came out of a high-level military industrial family, just like Jim Morrison's father, who was in charge of the U.S. Battleship on the Gulf of Tonkin that was never attacked, who was part of the inside job that justified the Vietnam War. The Frank Zappa and his family that seem to, there's a weird connection between high level establishment military families and their kids that seem to be, I'm starting to think partially sacrificial here as part of like being processed through the MKUltra machinery and then brought into becoming the new godheads that will then influence a new type of malleable generation, which the oligarchy has been really focused on. How do they affect the baby boomer generation? Everybody born after 1945 became a target, because it wasn't sufficient to go for individuals anymore. It was just not working. They had to go for the whole generation and work it. So a lot of these things were tied to very bad intentions. And I'm not saying that everything that came out of the 60s and every single 60s song or everything is bad. I'm not saying that. There's good people who will be good and use whatever they can to express goodness and their conscience. But the general field in which a lot of the things were promoted, funded, bankrolled, as far as the movies, the ETs, a lot of the Beatles that had, you know, Aleister Crowley on the Sgt. Pepper Lonely Heart Club Band album. That was that first track 20 years ago today that opens up that album was an homage to Aleister Crowley's death 20 years earlier. The Thelema philosophy of do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, that became the governing ethos of the entire baby boomers of live in the moment. Don't think about the past. Don't think about the future. Just, you know, let it be, let it be. These are words of wisdom. And you know, it became like a new morality, a new wisdom to let go of any considerations of the sacrifices of your grandparents and those who came before you or the consequences of your life lived a certain way to your kids or grandkids, because they don't exist. It's all just now. And that has a certain usefulness on a meditative like level. It's there's a moral way to approach like being present, but then there's this other Thelema Aleister Crowley doppelganger way, which became sort of an organizing principle around which the baby boomers, who we are such a disastrous with exceptions, but as far as the generation is concerned, big fuck ups there.
Yeah, and they love the idea of like, you know, like the idea of like rebelling against your parents is kind of innate to all of us. Like, oh, I maybe don't want to necessarily be like my parents. And when the 60s came along and that whole Timothy Leary and the Huxleys involved and you know, all these guys, you start to say, oh, this is in the Grateful Dead or they're out doing shows. And then you go, oh, this is free love. This is Haight-Ashbury. It's and you know, it's the new dawning of age of Aquarius and all this stuff. And we're twirling in the parking lot of a Grateful. Hey, listen, I've been to plenty of Grateful Dead concerts, and it's a fun time. It's an interesting time. But the disappointment I feel is now looking back on that and realizing how really astroturf that whole concept was, and how fake it was, and how the CIA is. I mean, Timothy Leary is working for the CIA, working with the CIA. I mean, there was no difference. It's like all the bad guys that we discover, the intelligence agencies and these creeps that are trying to control humanity, you find their fingerprints all over this stuff. And you go, man, the summer of love, man, the summer of love was on the calendar years in advance. It seems like over in Langley, you know, they were plotting and planning this thing for a long time. And we fell for it because in America, we love our culture and we love our media and we love our televisions and we love our music. And we let our guards down to a certain extent, because we hear this great song. And what you don't realize is that it's like, maybe the mamas and the papas aren't the best people to deliver this message as they're raping their kids. You know what I mean? Like maybe we're being spoon fed, you know. It all, you always wonder if, you know, I know people that are musicians. I know people that have made it as musicians, and I know people that have not. And you wonder like, what is that common denominator? Is it talent? Well, talent, it's helpful, of course, but there's something else. There's another it that makes you a big star as opposed to somebody else. And you always kind of wonder like, well, what is that? And part of it, I think I've come over the years to kind of learn is like, well, you're that's the guy that plays ball. That's the guy that has it.
Oftentimes
a different, deeper meaning message to his fans that, you know, maybe I don't respect it really, but
no, absolutely. It's one of those things where it's not good to over generalize. And I have to withhold doing that because, you know, like I on the Rising Tide Foundation that I manage with my wife, we have a cinema pick section with like movies that we love. That we recommend people check out that usually have to satisfy some standard of either having some moral edification to it, some intellectual edification on some level, and being entertaining at the same time, not being preachy. So they have to have those basic things on different amplitudes. And there's things that are made in our modern age, which are outliers, are great, you know. Kevin Costner has got a lot of big hits like these to his name. So does Mel Gibson. There's others who I think, you know, you play the game to a certain extent, but you don't sell. Not everybody sold their soul,
right?
Though a lot did. And it's gotten worse. I think it's got the chances today versus back in the 80s or 90s to make it really big in music or in film and keep your conscience and soul intact is a lot lower today than it was 30 years ago. There's a reduction. I won't say it's impossible, but you know, you look at these Taylor Swift concerts as well, and it's like all of the highest level, you know, top 10 hitters out there are doing outright satanic rituals on stage. A lot of this, as you pointed out, is tied to the military. Like, look at what they did even back in the 90s. In 1999, they had the Woodstock 2, second attempt, right? Overseen by people from the Esalen Institute, psychiatrists on a U.S. military airbase. You're right. That like, what the, honestly, that's where you're going to do it. And they consciously played these kids for 3 days as guinea pigs, depriving them of water, infusing tons of drugs into the process, and just seeing how long it would take for them to break and destroy everything and tear it all down, which was about 2.5 days.
Yeah.
You know, so we're being played with. And I think that should give people a certain strength of criticizing, I think, the subjective things that allows us to look inward and say, okay, I want to be self-aware of how my instincts have been colored, or my desire for reality has been colored by this artificial thing put in me. And by just being a little bit more inclined to self-introspect the heart and what shapes the heart, one is more able to then not throw all of it away, right? Because like a lot of people say, oh, but if I start allowing my mind to go there, then my entire life is a fraud, and I'd rather just, you know, live in the illusion. In that case, at least on this part, I'd rather just eat that steak, even if I know it's an illusion. I'd rather just take that bite of that fake hologram steak because it tastes and smells like steak, and that's fine. I'll live with that, and I'll just talk about conspiracy theories as a compartmentalization. Now the problem you have on your hands, your friends who might be listening to this, is you've compartmentalized your identity. You've started splitting yourself behind what you kind of know is a lie, but you want to hold on to, and the truth that you're committed to, and the freedom that you love.
I can give you a perfect example in my own life of this, and it just happened a couple of weeks ago. And I preface it by saying I separate the art from the artist, right? because I love the art, but boy, I have questions about the artist. I was in Las Vegas, where I lived for many, many years, and had been watching. I go back and forth quite a bit because I still have business out there, and I would watch the building of the Sphere. The Madison Square Garden Sphere. And it opened. It opened on my birthday a couple of weeks ago. And their first, the first band that they had booked for residency there, it was supposed to go through December. It's now been extended through February, is U2. And not just U2, but U2 doing their Achtung Baby album, which in my opinion is a masterpiece. It's my favorite album. When it came out, it was my favorite album. 30 years later, it's still my favorite album. They're going to do it. They're going to open the Sphere. I'm going to go with my wife. It's both of our birthdays. It's our birthday presents to each other. And in my mind, I know who Bono is. I've seen the red shoes. I know what's going on. I have questions. I have a lot of questions, right? And so you go to this event, and by the way, the greatest concert, like concert venue I have ever seen. And there's a scene in it where they're flashing words. And I get my camera out because, of course, I'm like, well, I'm going to, you know, I'm like half investigative journalist at this point. So I just start taking pictures, as many as I could take of the screen of what it was flashing. And I'm going to pull it up because the words were funny. First of all, first one was "everything you know is wrong," which I thought was great. Then one word was "Japan." Then one was "meme." One was "autopsy." One was "lies." One was "future." And one was "victim." And it was flashing so fast. So I know. So my point is, I'm walking into this concert with a band that's fronted by a guy that I'm pretty sure is on the wrong team. You know what I mean? Yeah, I love the music, and I know he's Team United Nations and worse, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm having this conflict, and you talk about compartmentalizing, like splitting yourself up, and you know, and I had to do that, you know, because I'm at this point now where it's like, there's part of me that just goes, can you just turn your conspiracy brain off for 2 hours and enjoy this really amazing show with music that you love in a place that's out of this world with the sound quality that's unlike anything you've ever seen, with a screen, you know, the whole thing is like rap. It is the greatest place to see a band ever.
Yeah.
And I never really could turn that part. It's still in the back.
No, and you shouldn't, because you're human, right? We're human. I love Doom. You know, like I've rewatched Doom probably like 8 times. The new Doom movies. I think the older one probably weak. But the new ones, I love it. The Blade Runner director. He did the upgraded Blade Runner as well. I love that style, the atmosphere, the storytelling, I need to turn off as well and just like watch something that's entertaining. And I know that Frank Herbert did not have a noble worldview at all. I know he was tied to some things that were very dark as well. But despite that, the storyline is engaging. Star Wars is engaging. I get. But so it's a question of like being human, like living in the world, but not necessarily allowing yourself to be qualitatively too deeply shaped by the world.
Yeah.
Right. It's this balance and like loving cake, but not being animated by the desire to just eat cake. Right. And or that's a weak example, but we're like of the flesh, but of the spirit. So I think every generation, you know, we've never been liberated from oligarchical systems. That in my philosophy, oligarchy is like the expression of the infantile state of identity and ego expressed in a political manner of controls. And a desire just to have my way, to I am God, you know, like the little 2-year-old screaming toddler is like, they want the world to revolve around them. And it's a hard reality when you have to make it through that on your pathway to becoming a mature adult and a sovereign being. You got to go through these steps. It's natural.
Right.
Finding boundary conditions. The oligarchy despises these boundary conditions, right? Because, again, they see themselves as being God. That's their aspiration is to be the God. To create the laws, not to submit to anything, which then forces a different. So that then forces the a creation of some sacred myths for the oligarchy themselves to justify their what is otherwise unjustifiable. Because a natural human mind and conscience, which I don't believe in the popular model of psychology that a certain number of people are just born with no conscience. I think that has been put there to maybe people are maybe born the way I see it as having less access to or reduced access to powers of conscience. But I see most of this is primarily culturally driven, and we all have a soul made in the image of God, and that we can become self-aware of what's making us worse and making our soul more unhealthy and work to make it better. So because we all have that power, we can all get better and we can all, but it requires a philosophy for that. Now, all that to say, the oligarchy has been like trying to hold us back from manifesting that potential of being a mature species of creative reason, living with true self-interest for a long time. And human beings, you know, what, if left to our own and not being manipulated by oligarchs and being, you know, perverted by having the worst inside of us brought out and normalized, or having stupidity normalized, when that's not happening, we generally are very problem solving, loving, good peacemakers and creators as our species character. But this oligarchy thing keeps on wanting to disrupt that flow because they themselves are doing, they are the useless eaters. There are useless eaters, and it's them, this bored class, right? Born into affluence with their giant multi-generational fondies and properties that they were just inherited, that then have to be, are managed by a cult that they didn't control, but the cult is now going to groom them to become the type of managers that has to perpetuate this absurd system indefinitely, breaking their humanity along the way. There's a whole art to doing that for the elites, as well as for the sub managers and the managers of the managers and then the masses, for a very watered down version of this sort of rite of initiation, using similar principles, but again, watered down. Like the horror movies we're trained to watch through the work of people like Crowley and Kenneth Anger, that didn't emerge naturally. We're right. Not doing the horror that we know that possibly Bono, I don't know, probably Podesta, but we know that on the upper levels, they're actually doing a lot of the things that you're seeing in things like Saw. But yeah. What happens when we get accustomed to taking pleasure in the effect of the horror of watching innocent people brutally, brutally massacred in front of our eyes, and we it becomes a genre? Well, holy right. Fuck, at that point, we're getting a watered down version of the grooming of into participating in something which should not be ever enjoyed. This is like,
yeah,
right. That something is being broken in that sense. So we're becoming more malleable, more inclined to adapt to unnatural situations that are then created in the physical world. That's how this stuff works for them at the top and for us at the bottom. And I use this in a figurative sense of the term, but ultimately I don't philosophically think that the oligarchy is destined for this universe either. Like I do see them as being like an infantile perversity of what they should have been if they had, like, these children oligarchs, if they were given some love, some good, you know, loving family, some good teaching, could have been great people, as some kings have in the past, and queens have been good people now and again. But they're just keeping themselves in a jacket, and they're projecting that the constraints that they have on themselves onto the whole system that they think is their destiny to control. And until we fucking wake up and learn their techniques and their arts of manipulation, we're always going to fall for the same traps again and again. And the UFO thing, again, it's one of many similar traps that require us to be superstitious, schismed, detached, yearning for meaning without a sense of purpose. This is what the whole planned holograms in the sky, all of the stuff that they're going to be throwing at us, it's all going to be redefining our ancient stories of ancient civilizations, from Tunisia, Egyptians, the Bible, the Quran. They want to just retool all of that stuff to now say, okay, it's actually been aliens the whole time, and now you can sort of satisfy some of the meta narratives that we all yearn for. What's the purpose? Well, we were genetically modified in a alien spaceship laboratory to between alien DNA and monkeys, and now there's us, and Jesus was an alien interfacing with aliens or whatever, you know? Yeah. So that's what they're going to throw at us. And it only works if we're nihilistic, if we're kind of like devoid of having a strong sense of our purpose, of our being, that'll work. We'll be more inclined to fall for that shit.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, there's one thing that I take comfort in knowing is that these people in positions of power, these oligarch families, the so-called leaders, and they're pretty incompetent. When you start to really examine them, they make a lot of mistakes. They're not the best and brightest. They're inbred. They act like it. They're arrogant. That arrogance is a huge Achilles heel for them. They are operating on some sort of timeline, and our lack of compliance helps to throw off that timeline a little bit. And any chance that we get to throw a monkey wrench in their plans, I'm definitely into it. And also, I'll tell you what, man, I cannot wait to see the next 7 parts of this show, Hidden Hand Behind UFOs. Where's the best place for people to find it?
They can probably find it most easily on CanadianPatriot.org or RisingTideFoundation.net. The there's a lot of elements that will be found also in the book series, The Clash of the Two Americas, that I just published, which they could also find that I co-wrote with my wife again, also on those sites. And my Substack as well will have the videos all over the place, MatthewErritt.substack.com.
That's Matthew Errett, everybody. He's back. He's back to explain this, and I couldn't be happier. I love this topic. I don't pretend to know a ton about it, but I'm interested, and I think that the more that we get honest about who these people are and what they're trying to do with us, the less successful they'll be when it gets to this Project Bluebeam phase where they're trying to show us that there's spaceship motherships coming to get us and everything. But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't pick anyone else to discuss it with than you. So I appreciate you. You can go to CanadianPatriot.org to find all of Matt's work. If you want to connect with me, the website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggressions. Thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
With a $5 meal deal with new McValue, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.